most people would think. You're right, you know. It kind of, probably the people who end up getting into comics because of these things probably would have found their way to comics anyways. So,
Yeah. What do you say is interesting? Like more, I think the independent scene, I think is really interesting, you know, because you're seeing,
absolutely.
especially with the internet now, you're seeing comics. You know, obviously this, you know, this person has so much passion to tell this story, and he's doing it in his own style, and that's what I really like, you know, to see those, you know.
And that's kind of what Image kind of championed, and they kind of didn't. They had like a lull for a while because they had this huge bubble. They made millions of dollars, and then all of a sudden the whole industry imploded. And then, for a while they were just chugging along, still doing decent, but chugging along. And then eventually Robert Kirkman came onto the scene, and he was like an Image Comics fanboy, and he was like so into it, and that's when he started The Walking Dead. And now The Walking Dead, I mean, zombies were not popular ever really. Like, they were never like hugely popular like they are now. And it's like now it's like everybody does a walking some sort of zombie thing with their comics, And it's because of him, and he was very strongly he I think he tried to work a little bit for Marvel and DC at one point, but then he was just like, no, I'm just gonna stick with Image. I'm doing my own independent thing. I own everything, and because of that, the whole company, they decided to go start reaching out more and more. I mean, they already were, but now they're publishing a lot of different people who are coming in just straight as independent artists. And it's a pretty decent deal. It's fair. But you're not gonna, like, if you get published by Image Comics, you're probably not gonna quit your day job at first. It may not even go anywhere, but you do get, you get paid before the company does, actually. So that's something you don't see in any creative industry anywhere. The company always gets paid first. The artist is last to get paid, generally. So that's one thing. And because they're doing that, that's kind of one of my goals. I would like to work for Image Comics because, as much as people have criticized them, they're just like no other company. I mean, even if you look into Hollywood or something, there's no companies who are really for the creator like that I've ever seen. There might be some other independent comic companies that do that, but I mean, to me, Image Comics kind of championed that, and that's I'm really interested in. I don't think I'm gonna be rich or anything by going there, but I would love to have one thing published by them just because,
Because
I guess.
they won't interfere with your vision or your idea, you
Yeah,
know.
I mean, I'll still publish whatever I'm doing by myself, but it's almost like it's not a business goal, it's more of like a dream goal type of thing, So.
But like I would think that after The Walking Dead, there were a lot of copy, there were a lot of imitations.
There's been so, I mean, everybody has, even Marvel's put out, zombie versions of their characters and stuff, and I'm sure DC's done it as well. And then, just even a lot of independent people are doing zombie stuff, and I mean, even the movies and stuff. I think that, I mean, Shaun of the Dead may have not been a thing if it wasn't for Walking Dead comics, I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of their influences, So yeah, I think he really re-sparked that, and he's got a ton of other books, and they're all good, but that's the one that everybody knows.
Well, what do you think that took off? Because there
Well,
must be so many other similar stories.
that's the question. I mean, Image Comics didn't even want to publish it. They were actually like saying that when he proposed the idea, they're like, okay, that's a cool story, but you gotta do something. This can't be just a zombie book. You have to explain it. Maybe there's like an alien clan or something. There's something else that is behind it, and you gotta get past the zombie part and get into something else. And so what Robert Kirkman did, he's like, okay, I'll write my new proposal. I'll bring it to Jim Valentino and all these people who at Image Comics. So now my story is about these zombies, and what's really behind it is these aliens and stuff and all that. And they're like, okay, we'll take it. So they took it. He scrapped that and went back to his first original thing. He did what he wanted to do with the zombies. And, like, eventually, after the comics, you know, after a few issues and the comics started getting some traction and people were into it, they're like, so when are you going to bring these alien things in or whatever? He's like, I was never going to bring those alien things in. I just did that so you'd publish my comic. And now he's like, he's now a partner of Image Comics because he just had this vision. He did it and people loved it. And I don't know. The secret sauce, I guess, is it's kind of like Lost. Like, I don't know if you ever watched that show, but
I watched one episode.
Yeah, well, it was hugely popular, and it's basically an episodic thing, and it's more about the people, but there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on around them, and it's just like a lot of these shows that are out now, Fringe and just different things like that. It's like, it's a zombie thing, but it's more about the people and how they would...
It's about the interplay of characters.
How they would deal within a world that has zombies and how they would really live. And it's, I guess it's more episodic. There's something to that that's just like really, people really like it.
Yeah.
So, and maybe the fact that he actually kills people off and they stay dead. And he's not afraid to kill a lot of people off. Like at the end of one particular part of the book that I read,
right,
he pretty much killed off the whole cast except for two people and restarted. And it's just like, you can do that because you're it's your own book.
Yeah. And also, I think, you know, it's like Game of Thrones where the author is brave enough to kill off his characters.
Yeah.
Where if it's a network show, they don't want you to kill off characters, you know.
Absolutely.
They want you to go on for, you know, and go on for the next season. Yeah.
Yep. Definitely.
But I always think, like, Harry Potter is another thing. Like, there must be so many books similar to Harry Potter
before
that became big. And it's hard to put your finger on it. What was the thing that made it so popular, you know? There's people just connected with it.
Yeah, and you know, there's always, I don't know if you've ever, I think I talked about it on my show too, but I just recently read the book The Outliers.
Okay.
And by Malcolm Gladwell, and I've been really digging his books. I don't know why, because they end up leaving me depressed sometimes. But
about the 10,000 hours?
He did talk about that, yeah, in that book. That was what kind of popularized the idea, even though the idea wasn't originally his.
Okay.
But it's weird that that's what people take out of that book, because that's kind of not the thesis of the book.
Right.
That's just, like, part of the book.
Yeah,
The main thesis of the book is basically there's a lot more factors than anyone can really control that make... Mm-hmm. one person successful over another one,
right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And it's kind of against the idea of rugged individualism, and it's more about community and stuff, which, you know, especially being an American, you're pounded that in, and I think a lot of countries kind of have adopted that as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Australia's the same, you know, thing that you can make it, you know.
Yeah.
It's the motivational thing, you know.
Yeah, and which I kind of agree, but at the same time, he really brought some interesting points of how, like, if you want to become a hockey player and you're not born in the right month, you will probably not become a hockey player.
Okay.
Because there's a certain cutoff date to the age limit or whatever of when the people can start, like, you know, getting into it at a young age. And, you know, if you just cut off at that spot, you might be too young.
Mm.
So if you go next year when you're old enough, all the people who were just a day older than you are a whole year ahead of you in practice.
Okay. Yeah.
So because there's that cutoff date, there's like 2 or 3 months that almost no hockey players are actually born in those months. So it's just crazy. Like that's just one of many examples.
Yeah, maybe a lot of people won't like to hear that because, you know, we're sort of drummed into this thing that you can do anything.
Yeah. If you try hard enough.
But you might not have the aptitude to it, you know?
Yeah.
The thing is, everyone is special.
Yeah.
Special like no one is special.
That's very true.
You know, we have these programs here in Australia, X Factor and Australian Idol and shows where you take basically a person from, you know, from the general public just wanting to be a star overnight.
Right.
But I always felt like, you know, when the real singers are the ones who, over years, they've practiced their craft, you know? Now it's like, you know, like microwave, that they want to put it in a microwave and speed everything up, you know? That you're an instant star. And a lot of those shows, the judges say, you know, you've got your star quality. I mean, that's a big thing to say, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and the thing with the art stuff is I think the biggest thing that makes it really tough, and I try to stay positive, but the thing is everybody's somewhat of an artist. I don't know, there's so many artists out there, you know, and there's just not enough demand for actual art. It's more of like it's a novelty, you know. Even an album cover, you know, they can just take a picture and throw some words on it and it's an album cover, you know. So they don't really need us, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a novelty if they do pay somebody, which they probably will try to get for really cheap. But if they do, it's like, oh, wow, that's a little bit special because there's a painted cover. But, I mean, will it just get lost in all the other album covers? And we don't even print albums anymore anyways. They just digitally download them, so...
Well, like, I mean, I think I used to go, when I was doing the design course, there used to be a design conference here in Melbourne called AG Ideas. And it was just all designers from all over the world coming to speak. But it was basically designers speaking to designers.
Right.
Or designers speaking to design students. The general public didn't really care. So it was just all people you've seen the previous year, just... having a love fest, you know.
Right, preaching to the choir.
Preaching to the choir, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's something I think we all have a hard time with a lot, and but it is good. That is a really good aspect. It's good to be very much involved in those kind of activities. As an artist, we need our peers and stuff. But at the same time, when it comes to, you know, a lot of these guys, 100 Days of Comics, they're trying to push their stuff out. Other people, they're doing these other challenges or whatever. They're trying to put their stuff out. But I see the same people over and over. And same thing. I put my stuff out, but it's probably going to most of the same people.
Yeah.
And they're mostly creative people. And it's like, I mean, my audience is people like who I buy their stuff and they buy mine. So it's really a wash, you know.
Yeah. We're gonna push our stuff to millionaires or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But there's something to that too. I was just I'm listening to actually another Malcolm Gladwell book right now, and what's it called? I think it's his newest one. It's called David and Goliath.
Oh, okay.
And it's all about the idea that people like the whole idea of underdogs overcoming a big overwhelming task, and how actually the fact that you are smaller and you are you know, the underdog actually sometimes has more advantages over the big Goliath type, because the Goliath type has disadvantages, and there's all these different ways that he goes to like illustrate it. But basically the whole idea with David is he wasn't actually, it didn't really matter that he was smaller. There was what he did, like slinging the rocks or whatever, that was an actual function of certain members of war, and those type of people can actually always take out the people who are more bigger and doing the hand-to-hand combat because they're from a distance, and it's like actually, it's almost the equivalent of, you know, there's a big crazy like Schwarzenegger guy in front of me who's got like crazy armor and swords, but I have a gun and I shoot him in the head. Like, that's kind of what the equivalent was. But the thing that makes it special is that nobody was expecting that. You know, nobody, they were expecting him, somebody to go on and fight Goliath head to head. And who could possibly beat him because he's so big and he's got all the stuff. But if you approach it in a totally different manner, then you can actually easily beat him because you're basically changing the rules.
And well, that's the advantage of being a one-person, you know, one-person business freelancer. Right. That you can move in different directions. You know, I suppose it's like a big oil tanker that will take days to move. And you're in a small dinghy, and you know, you can move in any direction. You can change things around.
Absolutely, that's exactly the type of stuff that he was talking about. And another thing that made me think about this was, you know, they were talking about the Impressionists and stuff, and they were trying to get all their art into the what was it called, the salon or the something? It was like the big. What's that?
It's like a show, an exhibition or something.
Yeah, it was like a big exhibition, a big gallery or whatever. And that's where all the rich people would go, and they love the art, and they love to, like, critique it. But this was all, like, you know, that nice, detailed, beautiful paintings, and it was nothing like what the Impressionists were doing. But the Impressionists, like, one guy even shot himself over the fact that he couldn't get his artwork into this place because that was where people bought art. They were always trying to get their stuff in there, but nobody would give it they would say that it's, like, amateurish, the stuff they were making and stuff. And goes to right what we were talking about. Stylized is actually sometimes harder than realistic stuff. But, you know, eventually they finally did decide to have their own gallery, do their own thing. And that's what makes the Impressionists who they are and why we remember them today. Because they didn't have the huge hordes of people going to their gallery. They had like 170 people. But that was enough to kind of spark a thing in there, an interest in, you
know. It's a bit like Image Comics in a way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, kind of, yeah. Yeah, I actually did think about that when I was listening to that, so. But that's one way, you know, it's like you might have disadvantages, and kind of like what I was talking about on, I think, last week's podcast, you might have some disadvantages, but what is your unfair advantage, you know? The situation. There are some things that you can do that, because other companies or whatever are much bigger and they don't, like you said, have the movement, you might be able to navigate through. So, you know, that's kind of the light within the darkness, I guess.
Well, I mean, the great thing of, I mean, I can't see myself working for a boss anymore. You
know? Like, right.
I've been doing this for so many years now. Doing work for a client is different. You know, it's a short time. You know, a few weeks you do a job and you work for with an art director. But actually, going back to full time work, say in a studio, I can't see myself ever doing that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, and I've always had a hard time personally myself with doing client work. Really, for the most part. Have you found that? You pretty much have found that too. Like, I mean, I guess it depends on if it's right within your wheelhouse. Because I mean, did you enjoy, say, your first gig with the Caverns of the Snow Witch thing? Oh, or
that was fantastic. Oh, I loved it. I really enjoyed it because I was doing fantasy art, drawing dragons, and it was just a deadline. Was you had to produce 30 illustrations.
Right.
And then doing all the educational publishing, that was. You know, after a while, you wonder why you're doing it. You know,
right?
Because it was just maybe doing graphs or these maybe 100 little illustrations.
Right.
You just wonder. I mean, that's the great thing with the computer. You can you can speed it up, but it's not such, working in educational publishers is not that exciting. The work.
Right.
But it's
right.
That's why I don't think I don't think I would like to pursue that, even though I was getting work. I can't see myself doing that in long term.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, back in the days, you know, I was listening to Kevin Cross' old podcast, the illustration one, Illustration Party Time or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, he was kind of champion, you know, go out, get illustration work. But then he was also showing the struggle side a little bit of it, too. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there and I'm like, why would I want to put myself through that?
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, I did try a little bit, but I was just, and when I did, I'm like, I just have no desire to draw this guy's album cover. Like, I just, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And I'm not getting anywhere with my own thing. You know, what does this really do for me? Even if they pay me well.
Yeah.
The money goes to Walmart when I have to buy some groceries or whatever, you know, and then it's gone. And like,
yeah.
My career is not furthered, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I just do it for the paycheck, but it's not work I would choose to do, you know?
Right, right.
And a lot of work is like that, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so.
So have you ever tried to, you know, push. Like, I realize you're kind of doing your own thing with these paintings and drawings, but, you know, you're really putting it out there. People do recognize it. Everybody I've ever talked to about your art has loved it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you, have you tried to sell it, like, more formally? Or, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything for sale on your site.
No. Well, funny, because I've been trying to figure out a way to make money from his art. So
right.
Those cute tiki girls. Recently, last month, there was a Tiki Oasis show.
Mm-hmm.
That was in San Diego. So they have this show every year. I think it's the biggest in the world.
Where
it's 3 days of tiki stuff. So there's also an art gallery in that show. So I sent two paintings in that show, and one of them sold.
Oh, awesome.
In that way, I'm trying to get my work out there, you know, where I actually do the actual painting, send it over there. Hopefully, you know, it did sell, but the other painting, you know, they sent back.
Right.
So that's the only really thing. I mean, putting work into exhibitions, you know.
Well, you're lucky they actually sent it back.
Yeah.
I hear that's an issue, too, but.
But see, I had to pay. I had to pay to send it. But at least one of them sold, and I suppose there's some exposure in that. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like you know, like you wonder, like I know you went to that con recently,
right?
And you mentioned in that podcast the different artists that were in that con.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, there's similar. I went to a con recently in Australia, in Melbourne, and all these people who are trying to sell their stuff, you know. And how much money are they making? I mean.
Well, some people actually they go to a lot of cons, like they kind of, that's their life, and they do actually make a living off of it.
All right.
But that's a tough life. I mean, if you're you know, maybe in your mid-20s or something, that might be a fun thing.
Yeah.
But if you're getting around 30 or beyond or whatever, especially if you have a family, I mean, it's just not something you can really do. You know, I personally can't. I mean, I do like to do as many cons as I can, but I stick to most of the cheaper ones within my local area.
Yeah.
My goal is to do, like, a bunch of cheap cons, you know, in my local area, and then maybe one big one a year, you know,
which
I didn't actually do this year. I just did the cheap ones, but maybe next year. But people do make a living. Some people do, and it depends on what it is. Some stuff is more popular.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there's this one guy, he does caricatures, and he makes a living going to all these conventions.
Oh.
But I'm pretty sure he's probably a single guy, and, you know, he can do that, you know. And plus, he's doing caricatures, so does anybody really care about who he is as an artist, necessarily? They just are getting these pictures of them, you know. They might not even remember what his name is, you know. So there's that, but there are people doing stuff like you and me are doing, and you know, making a name for themselves and stuff. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But you know, it is possible. But there's also, I look at the example of like Jeff Lafferty a lot. Okay. You know, and he's going on like 3 or 4 months now. He's been making a living.
Yeah.
Selling his art pieces, and that's super inspirational. There's other people out there doing it, not so much that I haven't seen a lot of them in like the fantasy or comic book realm doing it.
Yeah.
But there are people out there doing like a drawing or a painting a day, and they actually can make a living kind of doing that, and they post it up on their blog, or they might do a video of it. Yeah. And I could totally see you trying to do something. I bet you could probably do pretty well doing something like that, you know.
Yeah. You mean doing already like characters in Star Wars and whatever?
No, not necessarily. I mean, that's what Jeff Lafferty is kind of known for. But there's people who do, like I said, what was it? I said on the podcast when I had Jeff Lafferty on, I think I said it was, there was this one guy who was like an older dude, and his wife was actually the one putting it online, but he would just paint a different cupcake every day. And it was just like a cutesy drawing, but people would, you know, buy it because they like to hang it up in their house or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not even, you know, that's not even somebody else's property. That's you can do whatever you want with that. So, but there was a lot of other people who did similar stuff. A lot of people make money like doing art of animals and stuff like that. Yeah. But I could see the stuff you do, I think, is very translatable to something that somebody would throw on their wall. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which I think, you know, so probably the gallery route is, I would personally think, is good for you. And then also, you know, like I said, trying to maybe do some kind of either blog or, you know, YouTube thing or something where you show yourself doing it, like, almost on a daily basis would be great. But if you can't do that, even a weekly thing or something, and then maybe throwing it on eBay or making prints of it and throwing those on eBay or selling it from Etsy. There's a lot of different ways you can sell stuff.
Yeah.
But I've seen
artists like who do almost like they do the same thing every day. Like basically, the image is very similar. The paintings are very similar. It's always like a mermaid or some a girl. But you can put all the paintings together, and you definitely know that it's from the same artist. You know?
Right.
And then they do it every week, and people do collect. You know, but you know exactly what you're going to get from them.
Right, yeah.
It's a very much a distinct style.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you would definitely, I think, could do well at, because you do have a very distinct style. And that's one thing, this is one thing I learned from the toy stuff, is, and there's a lot of people doing this, but one of the guys who's like, you know, the Jersey Drozd of like toy stuff, you know, he talks about it all the time. Everybody knows who he is. He does the video show Toy Break with his wife.
Okay.
And his name is George Gaspar. And one thing he said, and I've heard him say a couple times, is the people who are successful at this are the people who do kind of one thing and they just keep doing it over and over and over. It sounds boring and it sounds dumb, but that happens to be what people like to see. Like, there's this one guy in the toy thing. His name is, I can't think of what his name is right now. But there's this one guy, and he does, like, sad teddy bears. This is, like, his toy thing.
Tell me, sadteddybears.com.
Yeah, basically. But you know, he's one of the most popular guys, and I mean, it's not just sad teddy bears, it goes into a lot of different things. He does like these paintings of like a teddy bear, like basically suicidal animals, like teddy and it's always a white teddy bear or a white like rabbit or something. It's like emo version of
a little bit gothic.
Yeah, kind of on the gothic side. But he's a really fun guy to hear, and he talks, and he's just like laid back and stuff, and he's a cool guy. Seems like one of those gentle giant types. But he's cool. There's also there's like a bunch of artists in the toy realm. Just they do like one thing, and they're just hugely popular. And they make a living off of it, you know, and that might be a good thing to kind of do that, and then you can branch off, and that might not be as popular, but at least doing that one thing gives you the freedom to do your other stuff, you know.
sounds a bit like Karate Kid, wax on, wax off.
Yeah.
You just do one thing and become this, you're known for that, you know.
Right. But with you, I think with the idea of a style, you can get a little bit more variety in there, because if you have a style that you're known for, you can do anything in that style, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And like for so long I saw you doing, you know, the girls and stuff, and I was like amazed by that, but then it seemed like you started introducing, you know, the robots and stuff a little more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some other things, and I'm like, oh, that's cool too, like, and it just, it's all in your style, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely something that is worthwhile, and I'd love to develop a style for me. There's another tactic, which is the intellectual property angle, which is so hard to even really get into, but that's kind of what I've been trying to do. Like, if I can make glyph or something my main thing, and if I could get that to be popular, then I could branch off in a lot of different areas, and I could have somebody else draw glyph even, and do my, you know, Robo-Hobo comic or whatever. Who knows, like, there's so many ways you could go with that, so that's kind of the route I'm trying to push towards, but I think a style thing might be almost a better route.
So, but I also think you're saying about concept, like, you remember the Garbage Pail Kids?
Yeah.
That was such a strong concept, and it was always one kid, you know, with an axe in his head or something.
Right,
you
right.
You, you know, you always have one character there on that card.
Yep.
And I always like that, where you know what you're getting, but there's always a little different things happening to the kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing that can help artists too, is doing a lot of series, do like six paintings of this specific subject matter or whatever, but you're doing different variations, or maybe you do a whole bunch of things, you know, in the color blue or whatever. Obviously, that's a very well-known series that was done.
Yeah. I noticed when I went to the con recently, there was so much Doctor Who stuff. You know, a lot of artists were doing, you know, portraits of Doctor Who, different characters, Star Wars characters. Maybe next year it's Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, will be
popular. Yeah. That's what I saw a lot of, was Guardians of the Galaxy, and Doctor Who is always big. There's this one guy who is a local guy here. They do a podcast called Secret Identity, two of these guys, and they both write books as well.
Okay.
And one of the guys, he wrote a book, like his basically commentary on Doctor Who and the whole history of it. And you know, those things, every con that he goes to, those things are selling like hotcakes everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
And even he was telling me, his wife is like, is there any more conventions you can go to? You're like making a lot of money just wherever you go. You're making money with this thing. And I'm like sitting over there, sitting nearby him with like my original characters, and nobody even really wants to hear my pitch about it, you know? So it's like, that's rough. And a lot of people are drawing group and doing like all these different Guardians of the Galaxy or Doctor Who things to get people to their table, and I don't know, I think that can be beneficial if you have a very distinct style, because people will come to you, see that style, and that's the marketing thing, and they'll be like, well, okay, I really like this picture of Doctor Who that the guy did, you know, what else does he have that's in that style? Okay. That's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you can get your name known that way, I think.
Yeah, true, yeah. Well, I mean, how long can you do that to do, you know, other people's property, you know?
Well, I think you just have to make sure that's not your main thing.
Right.
Because,
do that to bring people in.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Beatles. Look at all these different, you know, bands. They almost always start out with cover songs.
Cover versions.
And the Beatles, I think their first couple albums were all cover songs almost.
Yeah,
and then they started branching out. I mean, they started getting hugely popular. And, you know, they're now they're probably the most influential rock band that has ever existed. Yeah. You know,
yeah. But they were unusual in that time because they wrote their own stuff. You know, because a lot of bands were doing cover versions of other old rock and roll hits.
Yep.
Mm.
So I look at that example, and even the comic artists who did Image, you know, they started out in Marvel doing popular Marvel characters. You know, a lot of them drew Spider-Man, X-Men, X-Force, you know. And they were so hugely popular, you know, when they all left Marvel and did their own thing, it left this big hole in Marvel, and DC was barely catching up to Marvel at that time. And you know, it left that big gaping hole, and everybody just swarmed on these guys because they were so popular at the time. They were like rock stars.
Yeah.
And everything they put out, people were buying multiple copies of. And I mean, they became, I mean, that whole overnight millionaire, that type of thing, you know, they pretty much became that. It did take a lot of work to get there, but, you know, they pretty much did become overnight stars, superstars.
Yeah. So that Todd McFarlane started in comics, then went into toys.
That was kind of when he's always tried a lot of different things, and he actually was going to be in Major League Baseball. I think he was a pitcher or something, and he got injured. So he's like, well, I'll go to comics then. So that's what he ended up doing. He went into comics instead. And even now with his toys, he's always tried different things. And with his toys, he's branched out. And I mean, one of his biggest selling toy lines is, you know, the baseball player toys and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
Well, I had an idea of doing, like, you know, I like the original Star Trek, the original series.
Yep.
To do all the girls of Star Trek. You know, that was one of my
ideas. Yeah. Would be something that I think would be awesome. And you could even, the way I would kind of maybe say a good way to do that is maybe do something like, I don't know, how many girls would you say is in that popular?
I've got the first season on DVD, and every episode there's a pretty girl in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could do, like, if there's enough, you could be, like, 100 days of Star Trek girls, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, you could, I mean, you don't have to do that. You can make it 50, or you can be, like, you know, a Star Trek girl a week, you know, something like that, or two a week, or whatever. Like, if you set it up like that, and when you start, you're going to get like just a couple hits. You're not going to get a lot. But as you go and you get other people, maybe some of these people start catching on and they start sharing it, you'll start to build that momentum. And that series will probably help you. It won't, you know, it's not going to make you a millionaire, but it'll be one way to really. I think you got to do a lot of those little things, those little series. Yeah. And that's how you start to build momentum, and you get more. You kind of add one follower at a time, you know.
Yeah.
Depending on what it is, and you got to have kind of a focus. But that's the thing. A lot of us artists, we lack a focus. And if we can just even focus for a small series, that will help us, I think.
Yeah. We need some sort of pathway to go on, you know. Because like with the internet, like someone told you about the internet in the early 90s. Saying that there's this sort of technology where your art will be online for everyone to see 24 hours a day.
Yep.
You would think that you'll get lots of emails, you know. You think everyone would want your art. But, you know, when I made a website and I put my work up, no one cared.
Yeah.
You know.
And back then there was...
years, not many people really, you know. It's only been a bit of Facebook and, you know, but I really haven't had much traffic, you know, at all.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of get traffic to your website, but there are ways if you update regularly and stuff and you continuously point people to your website, but that's not even necessarily the best way to do it. You know, even just doing it on Facebook or Tumblr or something like that sometimes is the best way. To me, I feel like there's the most potential in YouTube.
Okay.
YouTube is the second largest search engine on the internet.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
they're owned by the first largest. You know? So they're a good place to go, and that's where all the kids are going. And, you know, music videos are big on YouTube. Funny, goofy videos are big on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's a lot of makeup, girls who do makeup tutorials who actually make a living just by doing YouTube videos.
All right.
Because you can get money from the ads and stuff. Artists have, I think there have been some successes with art, but I think that the thing with artists is they haven't tried to utilize it. A lot of them have. They're just like, I think just now people are starting, artists are starting to utilize YouTube, and it's a perfect venue for what we do. Mm-hmm. If you can get a good camera setup or whatever that can showcase your art, and just do it on a regular basis.
Mm.
I mean, Jeff Lafferty's doing it. There's other people doing it, you know. There's no reason why you can't build up to something with YouTube. And like I said, you gain like one or two followers at a time, but it's hard to get that momentum going. But once you get the momentum, then you can really start pushing things forward a little more and maybe add prints to the mix and add different... Maybe you'd start making enough money with your art and your prints and stuff, and maybe you can go on to that comic thing you've always wanted to do, or whatever these projects are, you know, that you always wanted to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I want one thing with your podcast. Like if you were writing a blog post, if you didn't do any videos, if you didn't do any podcasts, and you were writing your thoughts on a blog post, I probably would read it. You know?
Right.
I don't really read that much on the internet, but because it's a voice. You get to know the person, you know. It's much more personal, and because your podcast is more like a diary, like your thoughts. You know, it's not like an interview with someone.
Right.
I found that much really effective. You know, rather than I wouldn't really read a blog post.
Right. I feel the same way. That's why I do the podcast, because my thing is I can spare my ears way more than I can spare my eyes, you know. I can
don't read while you're driving.
Yeah, if I was an exerciser, I could listen to them while I'm exercising. I do a lot of driving, so I listen to a lot of stuff while I'm driving. And that's what I discovered with YouTube, is I never had time. I'm like, I don't have time to watch all these videos. But then I started realizing, especially with Jeff Lafferty, is really where I first got into it, is, oh, I can listen to Jeff's podcast while I'm driving, because I don't have to look at it. Really, he's not doing a lot
he's just
visually.
He's just doing his art, but he's talking.
Right. So it's basically like a podcast to me. So there's those kind of viewers, but then there's also the people who just want the quick, you know, 3-minute things. I try to keep my stuff really short for the most part, but I'm actually thinking I might start putting the podcast onto YouTube as well. And just do some more longer videos too, because people like both, so whatever, you know. But that it is, hearing somebody is way different, and I don't, as much as I'd love to read a lot of blogs, I don't have time to read blogs.
No,
at all.
I download the page, but I don't read, and I have stuff I've downloaded about a year ago, I haven't read it.
Yeah.
Interesting articles.
And some people do have time. Blogs are big. Like, people have made a living off of blogs, you know?
Yeah.
So.
But I think it's the human voice that people are attracted to, you know? Hearing that voice. Especially if you're interested in what that person is saying.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I agree as well, for sure.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, as you say, these are things that you have to really work at it over the years, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not just putting up a web page and, you know, thinking that people will come and buy your stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we all, I mean, I've done it in different, even not internet related. I mean, I sit there and created an album and worked really hard on it, and I'm like, I know I'm good, you know, at this, good enough to, better than a lot of people who I see doing well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I put the album out, zero sales.
Yeah,
and I'm like, why? But that's when you learn that lesson that nobody cares unless you get it into their, you have to like get it into their heads and be there constantly. Nobody's going to care about your stuff unless you show them and make them care, kind of, you know. You have to really put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you have to like do a podcast necessarily, or I mean, you got to find what works for you.
Yeah.
Even if you don't read blogs, maybe you're better at writing. I got a buddy who's really good at writing, and every time I read his stuff, it really is like intriguing. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And but he probably maybe wouldn't do podcasting so well.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe he would. I don't know. But you got to kind of find your thing and try to be regular at it. Is it? I mean, that consistency is a big thing too. So yeah, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things you can do, but I definitely would encourage you to try to do something, you know, that puts your stuff out there and sell it and stuff, because I think you could get some traction. I really do. I mean,
yeah.
You've got great craft. You've got a great style. You know, I think your stuff is marketable.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. It's hard to to figure out what to do, like, because I'm sort of in my comfort zone. You know, I'll do a drawing, I'll do a sketch, and put it on Facebook, and that's it.
Yeah.
And, so you tend to do and that.
I mean, that technique isn't bad either, really. I mean, Ryan Wheaton was, I mean, I think he made a living mostly off of the Kickstarter funds that he got for a couple months, but I think he was building up to, with his illustration work, he was building up to making a living off of that, and he's been a real inspiration to me as well. Now I think he got a job, you know, a regular job, but, you know, I'm sure he's still pushing that. But his thing was basically post stuff on Facebook. He kept trying to get, like, little websites up here and there, but for the most part, he's put stuff on Facebook, told people, if you want to get it, I have this many copies, you know, send the money to this email address on PayPal. And, you know, it seems like he always sells some stuff, you know.
Yeah. But I remember you telling me, on the podcast, you're saying about that. And I really like that idea, because when I think of selling stuff on the internet, I think, oh, I've got to figure out how to get PayPal to work and got to get a PayPal button. But his idea was just put it on there and say, email me if you want this, you know.
Yep.
It's so simple, you know, and I was making it so complex, you know. Like,
It really, at this point, it's really simple. I mean, even if you do want to set up PayPal and you do want to get a store, some people's whole website is just their Store Envy site. That's all they do is point people to there. And I think Store Envy also has, they're starting to have some things where you can have some pages with blogs and stuff like that too. So that might be perfectly the right place. Some people like Jeff Lafferty, he predominantly sells a lot of stuff on eBay. He's got a bunch of different streams from different areas too, but you know, eBay is kind of his push. So that's pretty simple too. He's just got a Blogspot site and an eBay account, you know.
Yeah.
For the most part, you know.
Yeah, but it's interesting how things you put up, how people react to different things, especially just with likes on Facebook. You know, I've put up things where I think this is a great illustration, and I get no one likes it. But I put something, you know, I think that portrait of a cat I did, and that got about, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 likes. And I said, well, I couldn't believe that people, you know, it's just a portrait of this cat. But you think that it's something you think that's really cool, people like it.
Your stuff to me, I feel, well, first of all, cats are popular. I mean, it's like there's certain things you do, like you do a picture of something from Star Wars, it's going to sell. You do something, the picture of a cat, it's going to sell. but the other thing is Facebook, as much as I do get excited about and spend a lot of time and effort on Facebook, it's actually not a great place.
Right.
It's a great place because everybody's there.
Okay.
But the way they have their algorithm is so messed up that it's like only a small percentage of all the people who are your friends with actually see it.
Okay.
And then if you get, once you get to, I think, 3,000 or 5,000 friends on Facebook,
yeah,
you can't, that's your limit. Nobody can get past that. So you have to have an artist page. But the artist page aren't as interactive, and they don't get as many views generally as your regular Facebook page.
Okay, yeah.
Or site or whatever. So there's so much complex algorithm to it that you're not getting it out to enough people, you know.
So there's no bang for the buck. I mean, there's you're putting lots of work in, but there's not many people seeing it.
Like, do you have an iPhone?
No, I don't.
No, okay. Well, Instagram is like if Twitter was more visual, that would be a great place because everybody sees what you put out. The only thing about Twitter is that the feed goes so quick, especially if you start getting a lot of people. So that's that disadvantage.
I get lost. Yeah.
Right. But Instagram, like I said, if you had the iPhone, Instagram is like a visual Twitter.
Okay.
And right. Some people get some traction with that too. Okay. I mean, really, the trick is to be on a lot of these things, be on what you can, be on what works for you. And like I said, YouTube videos, if you can get traction with that, that's good because they kind of are everlasting, you know.
Yeah.
If you have good SEO stuff, which I don't know how to get good SEO stuff, but if you can get that and you get a popular video, that's what can kind of go viral, you know.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff that can really catch. But still, you know, as you add subscribers, you'll start to get a lot more views. I mean, I generally get like 16 to 25 views,
okay,
you know, on videos right now, and I have 530 subscribers.
Okay.
But there's people out there. I mean, Jonathan Rector, I was just looking at his stuff. He's on his latest video, there's like 600 something views.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but he's doing comics, which is such a hard thing to actually make money at. It's like almost impossible. But what if he was doing something more like what you're doing, like with like a drawing a day, selling the drawing and then selling prints of that drawing? He'd probably be making a lot more money with 600 views per, you know, video. You know what I mean?
I think you mentioned once someone on like would table their, you know, it would be at a con and they would have their comic. And they would spend maybe a year making this comic, and they're selling it there. But their prints would be the one that would sell.
Right.
Their comic would, no one would pick up the comic. You know?
That's the general consensus.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense necessarily, but it's just comics are kind of a dime a dozen.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of work that goes into it. But that's the great thing about the comic is like, if you want to be a film director, you have to work with other people. You know, you have to get a team together, and you got to work with actors. But with a comic, I know there's a lot of work, but you can control everything. You know, you're an independent creator. That's the great thing about it.
The
only thing I find, what kind of story I want to tell.
I think comics are a great hobby. not a great career choice, but they can propel you to other to things, and you can use comics as a device to get work in other ways and make money in other ways and stuff like that. And it's great training. I mean, storytelling, writing. There's so much that goes into comics that you're not gonna do anything but become a better artist after doing a comic. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I think having actual drawing your character again and again in different positions. Is a good training, you know.
Absolutely. So, I would never discourage somebody from making comics, but I would encourage them to maybe think of other things as far as career choices, at least to get started.
Yeah.
And always do your comics, but try to find something else to do for a living, you know. And I really think that, and I probably should get into it more myself, but I really think the drawing a day thing in some shape or fashion is probably a good route for a lot of us artists, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
It takes time. Everything that you do is going to take a lot of time and hard work, but do a lot of time and hard work on something you love, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, I was saying that if you're going to do something, you might as well do your own work, you know?
Like, yeah.
Why slave away at a job you don't, even if it's an art job, you don't really want to draw this stuff, you know? But if you're drawing something you're passionate about, I know you may not be making money, but you're doing something you love, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, well, we've been talking for about 2.5 hours now, almost. So,
well, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, we could probably go on forever, but, you know, I mean, I might even have to turn this one into a two-parter. We'll see, but I'll probably just release it all in the same week if I do that, because, I don't know, I just think that if I were listening to a podcast and it was a two-parter, I wouldn't want to wait for a whole week to listen to the next half, you know?
But another thing I want to talk to you about, ask you about, is having a mentor, you know? Like, when I was in college or in school, no one ever said to me, okay, you got to do art, you know? You should do art, you should forget about everything else and just concentrate on art, and that should be your career. I mean, I would love to have someone like that to say that to me, you know? But yeah. I feel that I needed someone to say that, you know? I don't have that, you know, that sort of mind to say, okay, you know how some people say, I know exactly what I wanted to do since I was like 5 years old, you know?
Right.
I have no idea. I just know I like drawing. But I needed someone to say, this is, you should do this, you know?
Yeah, I could have used that too. Even though I kind of did know what I wanted to do, if I could have had somebody to help me focus better and you know, teach me some ways to do some of this stuff, that would have been great. And, you know, like I said before, you know, faith is a big part of my life. And one of the things in like the Bible that it says is train up a kid in how he shall go, and a lot of, or how he should go, train up a child in the way he should go. A lot of people take that as, you know, you are the parent and you know the right way a kid should go, so teach him to do that. Teach them to stay away from the arts, because that's not really a way that's going to work out. But that's not what that scripture actually says. If people were to look more deeply into understanding what it actually means, it actually means, within the original language, basically train up a child in the way that they should go, meaning the way that they are naturally, their abilities naturally push them towards, basically.
Okay.
So the way they're bent, the way they're, you know, the way they just happen to have a talent or a knack for something.
Yeah.
So, okay, being a parent, you recognize, oh, you know, my kid is, you know, really good at this and this and this, so here are some avenues I can try to push him towards and help him out. And even though I don't do that specifically, I have wisdom about life and how maybe business works, so help him put that aspect into whatever it is he's into.
Yeah.
And, you know, you find out people who have parents who push them towards those kind of things, they end up being very successful with their stuff, you know?
Yeah, yes.
And unfortunately, not every parent has the wisdom to do that. In fact, probably most don't.
Well, my parents were really like, they're really loving and all that, but they didn't really know anything about art, you know?
Right.
They really didn't they just said, oh, he's happy doing art, but they didn't say, listen, you know, there are cartoonists out there, you can do this, you can do that. I sort of needed that, I thought,
most, the general consensus, at least, you know, growing up in America and how people seem to view it here, I don't know how it is in other countries, but, you know, the general consensus tends to be that art is just not a good, you know, you always hear the adage of the starving artist, you know, and people just typically think they don't value art, and they don't think you can actually make a living off of it. Yeah. But they always forget that there are people making a living off of it, you know?
Yeah.
There are people making cartoons, comics, this, that. Yeah. Like, and they also don't understand the value of art, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit like, the Revitan saying, well, when are you going to get a proper job, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, this is this is obviously a little phase you're going through. You're drawing pretty pictures, but the real job is really in the office, working 9 to 5. That's the real adult's world. Yeah.
And then you probably get this one too, and I get it. And it's like, people are like, oh, wow, you do really cool art. Like, why aren't you doing that? Like, I am doing it. I can't figure out how to make it work, though, is the problem.
Yeah. But it's this funny thing that when you're sometimes a freelancer can work hard, you know? They might be working long hours, maybe even longer than a person in an office. Yeah. But just because the look of it, your drawing, that looks like too much fun.
It doesn't
look like work, you know?
Yeah, that's the other perception, is it's fun, right? I mean, we need this by Monday, so can you do this on your free time in the weekend, you know? Like, no, I can't. I have a family too, you know? Yeah. Or, you know, maybe I want to catch a movie or eat some dinner once in a while. Like,
I know. And, you know, they do me a logo, you know? Free, basically.
Yeah.
Like, how can I make money if you're not going to pay me?
It boggles the mind for sure.
Well, this is why I was in my art career. I felt my art career has really never got off the ground. It's always been fits and starts, you know. I've never had, like, you know, you think, like, oh, I finished college and then I start freelancing and then I've got my career.
Right.
I don't have to. I just had to work in my studio, and I'm just getting work coming in every day. But it didn't turn out like that, you know?
Well, I mean, also, you know, if this helps at all as well, for the most part, most people don't do the career that they went to college for.
Right.
You know, so it's not that as uncommon. It's not just a typical just to artist, but artists definitely do deal with that for sure, but from what I hear, a lot of people don't end up actually having the career that they trained for, you know. But the training is, you know, the training I think is never wasted. Unfortunately, sometimes it's just too expensive.
In America it's very expensive for
schools.
Yeah, especially if you're going to graduate and get into the art business, which is not, well, you know, you got this huge debt and very hard to repay it.
Yeah, I don't understand why sending somebody off into the world with a huge amount of debt helps society. Yeah. You know, and that's just repeated over and over and over again. And luckily, I wasn't fortunate enough to go to college, because I don't have a debt over my head.
Yeah.
And I did get into some debt, and I'm glad that debt is gone, and that debt is, you know, wasn't even close to how much I would have been in debt just by going to college.
Okay. Well, I think it was like $50,000 a year at some of these colleges.
Oh man, I'm sure it's probably even more. But yeah, I heard of a private school for just, like, you know, high school level students that was $50,000 a year. Just like, I haven't even made $50,000 in 1 year yet in my life, so I don't know.
I think the most I've made for my art in 1 year was maybe about $3,000.
Oh, jeez.
You know, it's just, I mean, and you know, like, I would get, like, you would hear, like, say, illustration work for a magazine. 1984 was $300. Say $500. Right. It's the same now. You know?
It hasn't
gone up. You know.
That's what I hear. And people say, that it was, but I thought it was even maybe a little better than that, and people say that it's gone down, like you can't even get that anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, it's just crazy. So, it's definitely rough, but I think that's why, you know, a lot of people are starting to go the independent route, you know? And you know, if they're going to pay me crap, then I might as well just do my own thing, you know, and see if I can get that going.
Yeah.
Some people are, you know.
I think Kevin Cross has been talking about that on a few videos, where basically want, you know, really ridiculous rates, you know, they're paying. Why slave away at some picture book where you're getting nothing?
Yeah.
You might as well do your own work. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you went to college to do that broadcasting course,
yeah,
feel that you could have learned that yourself, or?
I learned some stuff that I still use today, you know, that from there that I wouldn't have learned unless I, you know, read a book or something about it. But yeah, I mean, I probably could have self-taught myself that. But at the same time, there's something to be said for traditional teacher type training, you know, classroom training. You know, it's just good to have. To be in that kind of environment with other people from all different perspectives, and also having a teacher there to kind of coach you along the way instead of just kind of trying to figure it out on your own. I mean, there's a big difference between going and buying a drawing book and trying to do what it says and being taught how to draw. You know, I find it a lot easier to be taught, but I also find it a lot more expensive.
I remember when I started learning Photoshop, I would get those big Photoshop books and start on page one.
Right.
And obviously, you know, I wouldn't learn anything.
Yeah.
But, and then again, with art school turning up at least every day, and you know, you sort of have to do life drawing because you're there, you have to do it.
Yep.
You eventually learn, you know.
Yeah.
Or you wouldn't do it yourself, you know, if you stayed at home, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
And then meeting my friend, you know, in art college and doing that book, that was the best thing. Meeting him, and he knew so much about fantasy art.
Right.
If I didn't meet him, I, that really sort of, my interest really went up with drawing and all that, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. I'm really glad we finally got to connect in this way, you know, because you know, it's mostly just Facebook text usually, so this was really cool. And I think definitely would love having you on again sometime, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
And I look forward to more of your art, you know, and I would love to see you do like that Star Trek girl thing.
Yeah.
I think that'd be great. Yeah. I mean, and if you do that, you know, research different kind of Star Trek blogs, Star Trek, you know,
forums,
Facebook groups, forums and stuff like that, and try to get in there and just have conversations in there, and then, you know, show your art, and I think that I think you'll get some traction with that, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's definitely something worth trying.
I think so. Yeah. I think you have to have a direction, you know?
Right.
You have some, you can do this art, you know, I do this art, but you need some sort of boundaries, you know, some sort of pathway.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It makes your art more clingy. Like, it gives something people to be like, oh, he's the guy who did all the Star Trek girls, you know.
Yeah.
And he has a really cool style of doing it, you know. Yeah. So definitely, and you know, you can do your own other stuff on the side too, you know, so it doesn't get too boring. But it seems to be right in your wheelhouse, so it probably would work out.
I know there's an artist in America. He's not popular here. Called Thomas Kincaid. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's like someone who's done this type of thing. You know, the same thing.
Right.
But I know a lot of people don't like it. He's like too commercial or whatever. But again, there's an example of someone who's done the same work. You know.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, people don't like it, and I know I've heard that too, but he does know how to paint some really cool things.
Yes.
You know, and he has kind of his own niche, and you might not like it, but, you know, it doesn't mean he's not a good artist
exactly.
and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he just found a way to market it, you know. Yeah. And good for me, it's good for him.
Yeah.
You know, I just hate, more and more every day, I hate how cannibalistic artists are towards each other, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
They just...
Yeah.
You know, it's like once somebody starts getting some success or something, it's like, all right, it's time to, like, lynch this guy, you know? Like, it's ridiculous. It's like...
Yeah, it's resentment, you know?
And at the same time, those same artists are trying to do, maybe not so commercial, but they're still trying to do the same thing. They're trying to make a living with their art, you know? And it's like, give people a break, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, like, his work is, like, I think a lot of people who have no idea about art, if they know one artist, it'll be Thomas Kinkade. You know?
Right, right.
But of course, it's the gallery people that have this snobbish attitude towards that work, you know?
Right, right.
The gallery artists or the fine artists who look at that and say, that is too commercial, you know?
Right. Well, how did he get his start? I'm sure he got a start in galleries, you know?
Yeah.
And then it became something that he found was marketable.
Yeah.
And he started putting out books, and everything started having his art on it, like coffee cups and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have an artist here in the 80s called Ken Doan, and he did, like, koalas and very colorful paintings, and even did, like, he had his own wine and t-shirts, and he was just hated by the, he was loved by the general public, but hated by the artist.
Right.
Again, he was a very good artist.
Right. I mean, it's so hard to make a living doing this thing. I can't criticize anybody for doing it.
Yeah.
You know, but I do understand, and like the whole Bill Watterson thing and stuff with, he did Calvin and Hobbes, and he wouldn't market his stuff onto anything. He just did the comic and that's it. You know, I understand that. And if that's your choice to do that, that's great. But, you know, I don't have a comic strip that's making me a very good living, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to work myself up to it. And he did do commercial work before that, you know? But this thing blew up. He could make a living, and he had the luxury to make that choice.
Yeah.
You know, that he wasn't going to put it on coffee cups and stuff.
Yeah.
So like good for him. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he had, because he was so successful, he could make that choice.
Yeah. But not everybody has that luxury, and, you know, I don't think that somebody should dictate that that's the way it has to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, it is what it is, but... But, yeah, like I said, I think you definitely can do something with your stuff, and, yeah, it was just great talking to you and hearing from your experience and stuff, too, you know? Long line of experience with this stuff.
Well, I mean, because so many, you say so many people are doing it. You know, like I, for instance, like I, 2 years ago, I sent off postcards to different publishers. You know, maybe, I think I sent a postcard to you. And I sent these postcards, and I think about 60 of them, different advertising agencies, publishers, and I thought that I'll get a reply from at least a few of them. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know, nothing at all. Not even an email. You know.
Right.
And stunned.
Right. Well, that's in that kind of process. There's different ways to go into that process, and the way you've described is the way a lot of people do it. And I mean, I've never even done that process, but you know, you kind of got to go into it like, I'll be surprised if I get anything from this. And my goal is just to just keep pounding on their doors, being persistent.
Yeah.
Todd McFarlane is an example of that. You know, he got so many rejection letters, and he just got rejection letter after rejection letter, kept doing it, kept going, kept putting submissions in. He just was like, I'm not going to stop until I get a job. You know, so it's just being persistent, but that's expensive. But You know, so I don't know. There's kind of some different ways to go about it. But then the other thing with that kind of thing is how many people are sending in postcards. Maybe there's something different you can do, you know, something that stands out. That's another way to look at it. But rejection is going to happen, and you kind of have to go into it accepting that you probably are going to get a lot of rejections. And it's not has nothing to do with your art ability. You know? It has to do with other, so many other factors.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I send postcards, because I thought it would be a different idea, different to sending emails, where emails can be easily got rid of. You know, they come into your inbox, they're not unsolicited, they can, you know, especially junk.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'll try postcards because it's more physical. But I thought I would get a reply to some of them, but they were just in silence. You know, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think you were on the right track, though. Like, you know, postcards over emails. I mean, email is probably the worst way.
Yeah.
Sending in digital resumes, nobody pays attention to that. That's not even worth anybody's time. You know, things like that. But sending something physical, that is something, a big deal.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a different way that it could have been.
Yeah.
Maybe you just didn't send enough out.
Mm.
There's like I said, there's so many factors.
So, yeah, and exactly.
One of the factors is the fact that people just aren't looking for artists, you know?
Yeah.
So it's tough, but that's what I'm saying. Strike out on your own, man. You're already doing it. You just gotta maybe get a YouTube channel going or something like that, and you know, do like a series or something, and make sure. You know, a lot of times people, you know, they do all this work and it looks amazing, but you go on their site and there's no way you could even support them if you wanted to, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
You got to at least have that there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And get it in front of as many eyes as you possibly can, you know.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
I mean, even with all the stuff I've done, all the podcasts, all the videos, you know, I put my new comic out and I've gotten more sales than I've ever gotten, but that's like five people. You know? So it takes time to build up one at a time. Another thing that people swear by is email lists.
Okay.
You know, that's because then at least you have your whole group of people you can at any point send out an email to, and everybody will get it.
Okay. Yeah.
So people swear by that.
Mm. So you like a newsletter or some sort of thing every.
Yeah, and probably anywhere from once a week to once a month, and be consistent with it is probably a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't done that very well. I have an email list, but nobody ever subscribes to it.
Okay.
And it's because I don't push people to that, and also I'm not consistent with it. So, but that's something I plan to do in the future, because people do suggest that as being a very important part to trying to make something go. That's where you get a hold of your, you know, 10,000 true fans. That's like a really good place to get a hold of that, or 1,000, however many it is. So.
You mean using something like MailChimp? Is that MailChimp?
Yeah, MailChimp is a good one. Mm-hmm. Eventually, once you get to a certain amount of subscribers, you have to start paying for it. But
yeah, but it's a
good place to start, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're getting to that point, then you probably will be making enough money where you can set aside $10 a month or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. So, I think what you're saying, like being frequent, you know, having a small thing like Instagram is a good idea, where you have something small, you put it up there, but it's regular, you know.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of writing a big blog post and, you know, uploading every a month is sort of pointless. Where if you're doing something regularly, but it's something small, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's good to kind of hit from all sides. I mean, I do the Instagram thing. Those are the small things and whatnot. And then I do the videos, which are, you know, kind of on a bigger scale. The podcast is once a week. That's the only thing I do 100% consistently.
Okay, yeah.
And but if that consistency is a big deal, you know, I don't have as much people listening if I'm not consistent. So, you know, it's good to kind of have, you know, maybe for you it would be, you know, Instagram and Facebook and Tumblr.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, doing those little things, and then maybe once every 2 weeks or once a month, do like a newsletter or something, or do a blog post or something.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, more written.
Yes.
Or a video, you know, whatever it is. But I definitely think your stuff would translate to video very well.
Okay.
If you can get that up and running.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much, really, you know. I mean, I do all my videos on my iPhone. And a lot of people do that. You know, they just use their iPhone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but even digital cameras are so cheap nowadays, you know. You could do that.
Yeah. So when you upload it to YouTube, is it really quite simple?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Sometimes, depending on, you know, how good your computer is, it might be hard to get stuff uploaded. I mean, if you're just doing a straight up video with no editing, it's really simple. You know, you see me, I post up like 2 videos a day sometimes, you know, and it's just literally from my phone.
Yeah.
But, and then I'll go in, like, I post them privately.
Okay.
And then I go in and I change the cover art.
Okay.
Which is also pretty quick. I can do it really quick because it's the same thing, just different words. And I change the colors, too, for fun. But, you know, and it's pretty simple. You just upload it onto the site, change the cover, and you're good. If you want to do some extra editing, that's up to you, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll need a program for that, but...
But I like your videos because it's basically like radio with pictures.
Yeah.
Because I look at a lot of other videos on YouTube and they're very sort of a little productions, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't sort of, and it's not like editing, you know, like where they, it's almost sort of editing to comic effect. You
know? Right, right. Yeah.
Not really into those. I just like someone to speak and that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's different styles and people like different things, but I agree. Like, I kind of like just the talking ones for the most part. So,
Why do you think those makeup videos are so popular? Is it because of the nature of makeup that
Every woman does makeup. And there's more women in the world than there is men. And also women are the biggest buyers of things, especially makeup.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds stereotypical, but that just happens to be what the data would show, you know.
Right. Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all women like makeup. There are some that don't, but for the most part, you know, every woman puts on a little makeup every day, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if they're a working woman, you know. So I mean, it's such a huge audience.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
So that's I think why that does well.
It's almost being like an artist yourself, like you're putting makeup on.
Yeah.
You know, where someone watching someone draw is different, I think.
Yeah, and a lot of us artists, I mean, I hate to say it, but it seems like there's more guys than girls that I tend to be within the community.
Yeah, yeah.
And guys aren't as free with buying stuff. I mean, it sounds stereotypical, but it just is what happens, you know? Unfortunately, you know, it's tough. You know, we're like always marketing to ourselves and we don't really buy anything, so but there are women, I mean, if you have art that is more towards something that women like, that might be a strategy.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I think your stuff is pretty translatable to different groups, personally. But a lot of us people who do comics, I mean, unfortunately, it's not a lot of women, as much women who are into comics, but it's becoming more and more, which is cool, especially with the manga and anime stuff.
Yes.
And the cosplay, all that stuff has brought in a lot more women to comics.
Yeah.
So. So many aspects to all this stuff. That's why I can do a podcast about the same type of subjects every week.
No, but that's fine. That's fine because you go in depth. There's always different angles, you know, to approach this.
Yeah.
You know, and you sometimes you say things and say, "Oh yeah, you know, I didn't see it like that," you know.
But, right.
You know, I find it good, even if it's about the sort of similar subjects.
Yeah, that's the thing I always kind of feel a little worried about is if I'm repeating myself. But I do, like you said, you know, you try to approach it different ways. And I always think of, like, the metaphor of, like, potatoes. I don't know why. It's such a simple thing. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, how many different ways have you eaten a potato in your life, you know? There's, like, infinite amount of ways you could possibly make a potato work. So.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But this is the thing, you know, like, this art career, it's, you know, you're passionate to do it, but how to make money out of it.
Yeah, and that's what this, you know, podcast is all about, you know. It's like trying to find that escape, you know, route. So
yeah. But I mean, when you look at Jack Kirby's work, you know, you're just so inspired. Like, you know, you want to create that sort of work, that type of Jack Kirby is a good example of someone, you know, you look at it and you want to do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a mimic thing, but there's certain things that translate within his work. The biggest thing is his energy. There's just amazing energy in his work. And then his design is interesting. Some people are more or less interested in that.
I always like his technology, the way he draws machines.
Yeah. Absolutely no logic to it, but it looks like it works. Somehow it looks like it works. Like, I don't know. And, oh, the other thing that's huge with him is his imagination is, like, no, beyond comparison. You know, very few artists have the imagination he has in his writing and in his artwork, you know.
Yeah. When I first saw his work, I didn't like it. I preferred, like, John Basuma's work, which was very cinematic. It was very realistic, very cinematic. Beautifully drawn, and I looked at Kirby's work, and I felt, you know, it looked a bit amateurish, like, right? It didn't look right, you know?
Right.
But now I love it more than Basuma's work.
Yeah, and that's pretty typical, actually. A lot of people have that similar story. Me too, as well. I didn't like his stuff, and I was a fool. Because now I absolutely worship it, almost.
Well, I'm gonna call it a day.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been going for, I think we're getting close to 3 hours now. So, but it's, like I said, it's been a great talk, and like I said, we'll have to have you on again, and love your stuff as always, and so let's just close it out by, you know, let everybody know where they can find you and everything again. And
My main website is eddiecrosby.com.
Okay.
And the Tumblr site. What is it? Tumblr? Is it Tumblr dot?
I'm not sure. It's like Tumblr/ Eddie Crosby or something. Yeah, something, but I'll have a link in the show notes for all that stuff. So, and plus, if you just go to eddiecrosby.com, I'm sure you have links there, right, for all that stuff.
Yeah, so. There's links to Flickr and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, good, Marshall. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Absolutely, man. I'm so happy to have you on the show, because, like I said, I'm a big fan.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm glad you agreed to do this. So, and I'm glad we could connect. Actually, it's probably getting really late for you now that I should have thought
that's
of that.
That's all right. Early. It's okay. Now it's 2 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry about that, man.
it's spring here. The first weekend of spring.
All right.
So that's autumn there.
Not quite yet. We have a good 15 days left of summer, but But yeah, it's getting there.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for the models you sent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had to send something back because cause you sent me so much awesome stuff, so I'm glad you dig it.
is this called kit bashing?
Sort of, kind of. I mean, my kit bashing is more when you take a lot of different parts and put them together.
Right.
So, but this is more customizing an existing toy.
Okay.
You know, with paint. So.
Right. I think it's here. So I'm going to photograph these. You know, I need so like close up photography.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. I'm glad you dig it.
Yeah. No, it's good. Good. And
cool.
Right, Marshall. So. Say goodnight.
Absolutely. Yeah. Have a good night. And for everybody else, you know, thank you for listening to the Escape Artist podcast. And I hope you enjoyed this one. I'm sure you did because we had a lot of fun talking. And I'll talk to you on the next week on the Escape Artist Escape Artist Podcast.
Background music provided by Mr. Pool. You can find show notes at donkeyjawprojects.com, where you can also sign up for the newsletter. If you'd like to support, go to patreon.com/plex or go to iTunes and leave a review. And thank you so much for listening. Now get your butt out there and make some awesome stuff. It's Escape Artist.